You're listening to Booth Talk from the After Movie Diner. And on this episode, we're incredibly happy to bring you an interview that we did with S. Craig Zahler, the director of the brand new and awesome Western Bone Tomahawk, starring Kurt Russell, Patrick Wilson, Matthew Fox, Richard Jenkins, and also this week's guest, Sid Haig. Yes, Sid Haig, who crops up in the beginning of this movie with a fantastic character and a fantastic cameo. We got to speak to the legendary Sid Haig as well. What a fantastic experience. We're going to bring you both of those interviews back to back right now. S. Craig Zahler, the writer-director of Bone Tomahawk, and Sid Haig, the legendary Sid Haig, who's had a fantastic career, and we talked to him about that and about Bone Tomahawk.
Hey. Hey, Craig, how are you doing today, sir?
Good, how are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. So I saw Bone Tomahawk last night, and I have to say it was absolutely fantastic. I loved every minute of it. It was really gripping, as well as a great character study. So I believe the story started off as a novel. Is that correct?
Sort of. The origin of this project was I was going to do a micro-budget horror movie, and I'd had, I think this in 2011, I'd had about 20, 21 different scripts sold or optioned into the Hollywood machine, and none of them made. And I was pretty tired of it, and I was watching a lot of micro-budget independent horror and was going to make one of those. And I had a meeting with my manager and friend and the main producer of this movie, Dallas Sonnier, and my agent, and said, I'm going to do a micro-budget horror movie and just pay for it myself. And my manager, Dallas Sonnier, suggested that I adapt a book of mine that's called Race of the Broken Land into a low-budget Western with, you know, with some horror elements. And the scale of that book is massive. And it's probably 10 times as nasty as Bone Tomahawk and really very, very elaborate. And there was no way I thought I could do something like that for anything less than a gigantic budget, not to mention it's a book. And I would have to, you know, put 2/3 of it in the toilet at the beginning of the process to even get it down to movie length. So instead, I said, let me write another Western that is a rescue mission. And that's how Bone Tomahawk came about. So the it came about in that way. There is no book that's Bone Tomahawk, but Race for the Broken Land is a rescue mission Western, which was sort of the starting point for Bone Tomahawk. But none of the characters or events are the same. It's just kind of the same ensemble character piece of people looking for people who've been kidnapped in the Old West.
Right. And obviously there were sort of multiple genres I see that you've worked in, and there's two sort of main genres in this film. Were you a big fan of genre filmmaking growing up? Was that sort of your ideal, a horror, sci-fi, Western, those kind of things?
Yeah, the thing is, the interesting thing about genre, because certainly for me, if you ask me my 20 favorite books, my 20 favorite movies, these are all going to be genre. Maybe there's, and I actually think pretty much everything is genre, because I think if you're doing family drama, this is a genre. But I know that at this point it means kind of if you're going a little bit further into niche interests like science fiction and horror, crime, westerns, and I write all of those. I've also written sitcoms and romance, but I tend to favor western, science fiction, crime and horror. And so in the case of Bone Tomahawk and my published Westerns, I feel that they're all Westerns, but when they get dark, they just go a lot further than you'd expect. Like, I feel Bone Tomahawk is a Western through and through, and delivers on the elements of that genre that I'm interested in delivering. But when it gets into the nasty stuff, it gets very nasty, and so it has, you know, 5 or 6 scenes of horror in it, and three of those are extreme horror. So I understand that for most people it feels like it's a genre bender, but for me, it's a Western. It's focusing on a group of people out in the, you know, out in the frontier, and that frontier is a moral and physical crucible for them. And that kind of adventure story is to me what a Western is. And you could, if all of the horror elements were dulled down, this could essentially be the same story. I'm just a horror fan, and as a writer, my process is to surprise myself, so I tend to take things further than even I'm expecting when I write them.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree and see where you're coming from. I think the necessity is sometimes, in order to push it to other people, people have to, like, put things in little pigeonholes. But then I try not to. But,
right.
Yeah, that's, it's just
and,
easy.
And I understand why a lot of people say this is a horror Western. And it's just not how I see the piece, but I know why people see it that way. And I adore horror, so it's not, you know, sometimes you'll hear someone makes a horror movie and they talk about it like it's a thriller. They're trying to soft sell it, and I'm a horror fan, and I was going to go make a horror movie. But when I make a movie that's a horror movie, the bottom line of that experience is it will be a scary experience, kind of for its duration, and maybe there will be breaks in it. But the bottom line of a horror movie for me is scare somebody, and that's not the bottom line of Bone Tomahawk. It's certainly what I'm trying to do in a bunch of sequences, but not the majority of sequences.
No, it's it's a slow burn tension builder rather than an out and out scare fest. And therefore has far more in common, like you say, with a full blown straight kind of dark, old fashioned, gritty Western. So were there anything when you were writing the novels or when you were prepping the movie, was there any kind of research you came across that would kind of play into this idea of you know, these people living in caves who were sort of doing these terrible things, these cannibalistic groups or whatever it was, either natives or whatever. Were there kind of campfire stories you came across, or was there any actual real research that sort of went into that, or is it all out of your imagination?
It's out of my imagination. The troglodytes and the literary heritage of Bone Tomahawk is kind of twofold, and one is Westerns, which began with Owen Wister and the Virginian, and kind of fully arrived as a genre right at the beginning with that book. And around the same time, there's an English author, H. Rider Haggard, who wrote a book called King Solomon's Mind, and that's the first of what's considered lost race fiction. And I'm a big fan of lost race fiction, and what these are there is. People are adventuring, and oftentimes it's in Africa. You're dealing with a desert, or perhaps it's a jungle, and you come across this hidden race that sort of had its own evolution, and it's sequestered somewhere, and you get a different idea, and just a different society removed from the known societies. And so Bone Tomahawk is a conflation of these genres. It's the lost race fiction. It's a lost race story and a Western story brought together. So the troglodytes are they're fictional entirely. They're not based on anybody.
Right.
And then it was a lot of me kind of reverse engineering them to land with certain ideas and how they communicate, and also just their kind of utilitarian approach to living. And how they function. All of that is fiction, and just comes from me wanting to see a Western that eventually lands in a new place, you know, distinctive to just this one piece of fiction.
Yeah, of course. Now, this is your sort of first feature-length directorial film, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So as I could see just watching it, there are three things that would probably, I would imagine, be most challenging for a first-timer, and that would be, first of all, the starry cast. You've got an incredible cast in this movie, phenomenal actors, which we'll talk about in just a second. You've got a kind of a remote, probably difficult filming terrain in the desert and the hills and the mountains of California. I think it was filmed there. And then lastly, obviously, the special effects in terms of the gore effects and the violent effects. Did anything give you kind of pause for thought as you went in, or were you gung-ho for all of it?
I'll tell you what made me concerned was the shooting schedule for this, which we shot this movie in 21 days, and our budget, not including some interest on loans, was $1.8 million. So this isn't something where we could really solve a lot of our problems with money, and we didn't have time for it. So the reality is every single element of a movie, of doing a movie this ambitious in 21 days for that amount of money, was a challenge. And my preference is for all special effects, all stunts, all things like that to be done practically, and they are. So we're using, when you see arrows fly in this movie, we're using the cutting edge technology of 1920, where people are sending arrows along trick lines because I want the actors to be able to react to real arrows. So it's not CG. We have one or two moments in the movie where we have to clean up something, but everything you're looking at is done practically. All of the gore effects, the people on the horses, pretty much all the stunts are performed by the actors who are in those roles. There's only one shot in the movie that's not performed by the actors. And so there were challenges all across the board. And my insistence on practical effects for everything, I didn't speed things up. And frankly, the amount of time we had to shoot this movie was just unfair to everybody. It was unfair to the actors. It was very unfair to the special effects team, and Hugo Villasenor did a great job, but there was just stuff sometimes we didn't have time to go again. And a lot of the effects you're looking at in there are the first take, and if they're not the first take, they're the second take. And that was really all the time we had, because resetting a special effect when you are cutting through latex and into these fake limbs or body parts that have been built, like rebuilding that is very time consuming, even if you have a fast working crew. So it was a challenge in many regards, but not really fair. Probably the average take, just in terms of performance, was we did three or four takes of most shots. And so that's where we were with that. There's a fair amount of first and second take stuff in there. And, a situation is when you're making a movie like this is you need to be confident that you have what you need. And so when I saw something and I knew it was, I'm like, that's the take. And if it was the first one or the second one, great. Because then we're moving on. And when we get into a jam, with another scene, we'll have time. And, there's one day in particular, which is our first day, where we really kind of didn't make the day. Where we had problems. I mean, we're using all of these real vintage guns, and like the gun kept falling apart, and dirt was going in there. There were problems with the special effects. There were problems with the location, and just everything. And people were doing stunts, and so it was just starting to pile up with if people weren't getting it right the first time. Or one department got it right the first time, but the other one got it right the second time, and it didn't line up. This starts to threaten your ability to make the day. But we were budgeted for 20 days, and 20 days with a fair amount of overtime, which we certainly shot. And in the end, we wound up going one extra day. So it was all of those elements. I mean, the horses aren't really known for hitting their mark on the first take.
Right.
So you're kind of figuring out shots that will work, and ways to adjust when those horses don't hit their mark on the first date.
Just to cast then, I mean, obviously I wish we had more time, but Kurt Russell, Richard Jenkins, Matthew Fox, and I'm going to forget the last guy's name now, sorry.
Patrick
Wilson. Absolutely phenomenal cast. I think they all give great performances. Richard Jenkins is almost unrecognizable and incredible in the role. It's one of those small roles that should get nominated and be awarded, but probably won't, sadly. How did you compile something, this incredible cast like this, and what was it like for you, a first time of working with these incredible people?
The way they came on board was the script, and that's how everything like this begins, because they were terribly paid, you know, and even people like David Arquette coming in, probably for minimum wage, and Kurt Russell, Richard Jenkins, Patrick Wilson, Matthew Fox, they just all really believed in the material. Again, it was not a payday that any of these people came on board for. And then they, you know, they spoke to me, and I gave them confidence that I could get it done. And even though I'm a first-timer, I directed theater, and I'd worked as a cinematographer. So I went through in as much detail as any of them wanted to hear the how we were going to shoot it and accomplish it. And I'm sure everyone had their doubts as to how this could be accomplished in this amount of time. But, I mean, it, for me, it wasn't really daunting dealing with these people. It's actually what doing something like this required, because if you don't have performers of this caliber and you're really trying to get something decent in very little time, it's really difficult. So having people who come in and give you something pretty good or very good or great straight out of the gate with, you know, with some discussion as to what they're doing is the way that you can move through this amount of material quickly. So I was, you know, I knew for a long time the type of talent this piece was attracting. It's Kurt Russell and Richard Jenkins were attached for about 2.5 years before we shot. And that's what gave me the confidence that we would be able to do it in this amount of time or performers of that caliber.
Yeah, I'm sure it's because you gave them the opportunity in the first couple of acts to just have that incredible dialogue and develop their characters. It's fantastic just to watch them act in that situation. Anyway, Craig, thanks so much for your time. It was a real pleasure to talk to you. I hope Bone Tomahawk is a big success because I really, really enjoyed it, and all the best to you, sir.
Cool. Thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
No problem. Have a good evening.
You too.
And now my conversation with legendary actor Sid Haig.
Hi, Sid. How are you?
Okay, John. How are you going?
Oh, very good, sir. Very good. So I wanted to ask you, first of all, how did the project of Bone Tomahawk come to you?
It just came to me. I was offered the role, and I read the script, and it was so intelligently written. The characters were so clearly drawn that I just I had to do it.
And what was it like working with David Arquette and the director?
Fantastic. David Arquette is a great guy. He's fun to work with. And we had very little time to develop the relationship between the two characters. But that went really well and quickly as we established, you know, that relationship through maybe the first rehearsal, first and second rehearsal for the first shot we did. And Craig Zeller is an amazing guy, very intelligent, and extremely creative, and he does his homework. So people have a preconceived notion of first-time directors, and he doesn't fit that slot at all. He really did his homework and knew what he wanted to do, and he was pretty much on the money all the time.
Yeah. And were you a fan of Westerns going into the movie?
As a kid, I grew up watching Westerns. I mean, when I was a young kid, there were basically Westerns and horror films and musicals and comedies. And, those were the big four genres to look at. That was the occasional call of the Top Ten. So I, grew up watching Westerns.
Oh, excellent. So it was fun to be in one, I imagine. So you've had incredible longevity in your career across many different genres. What do you attribute that to?
Never quitting.
Sorry, never quitting, right.
Yeah, I just keep going. And I keep looking for scripts that are intelligent and with good storyline and well-drawn characters. And the reality is, though, that sometimes you have to pay the bills, and sometimes take a film that you might ordinarily not want to do, but the reality is that you have bills to pay. So you take it and hope nobody sees it.
Yeah, of course, of course. And just lastly then, Sid, your work with Pam Grier is some of my favorite from the 70s films you did with her. Do you have any lasting memories of that time in your career that you can share with us?
Well, she and I just became great friends almost instantly. I just, you know, think she's a wonderful person, and of course, she's gorgeous, and all the, you know, all the rest of that goes along with it. But she's a very classy lady, and you know, we had a great time together. We did 6 films together, and we just, you know, grew as friends. And when I did Jackie Brown, Quentin didn't tell Pam that he had cast me in the role of the judge, and when she showed up on the set, she just took one look at me in the black robes and started cracking up. She just fell on the floor laughing. It was good. And we hadn't seen one another in a long time, but it was like we had lunch the day before.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. Thank you ever so much for your time today. And I really enjoyed Bone Tomahawk, and it was a great surprise to see you come up at the beginning of the movie as a fan of your other work. So thanks so much for talking to us today.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.